Welcome to Vermont Favorites, a production of WBTV LP Burlington. I'm Adam Rabin. Each week I talk with musicians, artists, performers, and creators about their unique journeys and what they love about living in Vermont. My guest today is a talented and very busy comedian who jumps between improv, sketch, stand-up, and talking about movies. He won the Vermont's Funniest Comedian Contest in 2017 and performs regularly around the state. Please welcome Vermont favorite, Tim Bridge.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
That's wonderful.
Thank you for inviting me into your home to record.
Yeah. The dog is quiet now.
The dog, finally.
After being very loud.
Yes.
To start.
Yeah, we would have started recording about an hour and a half ago, but we finally got her down.
Pinned her down. I don't. Yeah. It's a good start.
Let's talk about abusing animals.
I abuse my dog.
No. Let's talk about more innocent times, perhaps.
Yeah, please.
Growing up in Medfield, Central Massachusetts.
Central Massachusetts, baby.
That's where you're from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you grew up born and raised. Where is Medfield?
Oh, well, I grew up in Marlborough, which is a little larger. It's a little closer to Worcester. And then Medfield is about, I don't know, 45 minutes outside of Boston. It's a small suburb.
Gotcha.
I moved there in high school. So, you know, Central Mass, man. Yeah, it's pretty,
pretty chill.
It's pretty chill.
Yep. You mentioned something about, I don't even know what this is that you mentioned you did. Destination Imagination World, sixth place.
Yeah, that was in high school. It was a program. I had never even heard of it, but apparently these friends of mine who asked me to be on their sort of team had done it since they were kids. There's different age groups for it, but it's essentially like a problem solving competition. But like we did one where it was like performance and improv also related something it's kind of hard to describe. What ours was you get, I'm having trouble remembering. It's you get like six endangered things.
Right.
And you have to like make an argument, like a PSA for why it should or should not remain endangered.
Oh.
And then you also had a list of like 10 character archetypes that you had to fit into like your skit. And so we would study like getting facts about all the different, endangered things. So it's everything from like a specific animal to like landline telephones and stuff like that, where it's like, yeah. So you show up at the theater and they pull an envelope out and it's like, okay, you are landline telephones and whiz kid. go. You have five minutes to plan and you have one minute to perform.
Was that like your first introduction to like theatrical and comedic?
No, I mean,
work?
I had done like theater in high school, like plays and such, but never something this sort of on the spot,
competitive.
Sort of, yeah, competitive too.
How is it? I've always had trouble reconciling art and competition.
Because it's dumb and it's subjective.
And it's fundamentally dumb.
Yeah. There's no, like you mentioned, I'm the winner of Vermont's Funniest Comedian. That is what, what does that even mean?
That's
ridiculous.
Mean? Yeah.
I'm very thankful for that title. It's nice to have. It's fun to do that contest, but it's like, I don't know, it's so subjective. It's so strange
What do you really take away from that?
I didn't get booked in more shows, so
nothing.
I get a fancy title that people will be like, okay, so this guy will be funny. And now it's an expectation every time I get on stage, and it's like, okay,
everyone's just kind of sitting there with folded arms.
Yeah.
Like, all right, this all right, guy's
well,
the
this
funniest
guy's
comedian.
Better be
so,
if this is it.
Yeah.
So but it's silly. It's like a silly title. It's more like for, you know, you do a contest and it's fun to do a contest.
Right.
But you know, it's ridiculous. It's, I did very well.
Yeah.
But I won according to two judges. Like I didn't do, I did the
best.
It was
just like subjective, just like two judges.
Judges. Yeah. They have like a numbers criteria. Like we got it. Like it's a breakdown of like originality, material, you know, audience reaction, that sort of stuff.
Right.
But ultimately they choose and it's, I did the best that I'm not Vermont's funniest comedian. I did the best that night, according to two people. You know,
I see.
Like yep. that's what it is. And it, but it's, you know,
you got to be good to be lucky, though.
Yeah,
you got to be. You
it's
gotta
hard
be prepared.
To reconcile have, yeah. competition. But that's yes. where something like the thing that I did in High School Destination Imagination was more like problem solved. So it felt yeah. like academic in a way.
Sure.
So it wasn't exactly. Independent and just like
right.
such a broad.
So you had some right. So you had some of the theatrical, like the you can't judge. You know, you're either good or you aren't. But when it comes to the academic stuff, you can actually get graded a little bit more
yeah,
objectively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and that you know, but the performance aspect was fun. That's what drew yeah. me into it.
How long? So when you won the Vermont Funniest Comedian
yes.
last year,
mm.
how long have you been? Had you been doing stand-up at that point?
On and off, like 6 years?
Yeah.
But more seriously, the 2 years
gotcha.
Prior.
What got you into it from the get-go? So 6 years ago, I guess, was that like college
yeah,
time?
Yeah, I was in college. I went to Fordham University
yeah.
in the Bronx. Bronx, New York.
Bronx.
Yeah. Bronx, New York. And yeah, I got into I always liked theater, but I also was funny and liked reading joke books
right.
growing up, and like that was I like being funny, man. It's fun being funny, yeah. you know? It's just
fun
to make people laugh.
Where do you
suppose
that came from? Is like family? Is you got a funny family or
I have a funny
family.
I have a funny family, but I just like was fixated on jokes. Like I liked I got a joke book and I was like, this is awesome. I like all of the and thinking about the people who wrote these joke books and how funny they are and yeah, but it never really translated into anything until I started doing like theater and stuff in high school. But I always gravitated more towards comedy, and I just sort of on a whim auditioned for the improv team at college, and then helped form, or I didn't help form. I just worked the door, and they let me on the team, helped do like a stand-up, a little stand-up thing also there. But it was, you know. Yeah.
What kind of theater things were you doing? Were you in plays?
Yeah, I was in plays in high school. That was so I liked to do performance and acting and that sort of stuff, art.
Right.
I always sort of gravitated more towards art, you know, like writing and stuff like that.
Okay. So the writing side of it to give yourself something. So you were reading other people's lines obviously when
you're
doing plays.
You don't really have much opportunity to do your own stuff in high school.
But
you know?
did it like give you the exposure, the kind of say, wait, I could probably do something like this? Or was it more, did you come at it from like a different angle altogether?
I always want to do that. Like, that's what I like to do. That's what I want to do. Be the best to do that, to get paid to do the thing that you love to do.
And if you need to be the one that creates the material, then so be it.
In a lot of ways, that's kind of what you have to be the one to create the material. Unless you're, you know, Brad freaking Pitt, and you can look like that, you know, and or have the connections to.
Yeah, I've often thought that, man, if I could just look like Brad Pitt, I would have so much fun.
Things would be I think a little easier.
I think they would be a little easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. I'll have to think on that.
Yeah.
What were you studying? So you went to Fordham,
mm-hmm.
and what did you study there?
I was studying film. I ended up dropping out of college. It didn't really. It was not my bag.
No.
I don't think.
How far in did you get?
Pretty far.
Yeah.
Like I don't have a lot left to do to finish because I did also transfer to UVM. After I dropped out, I tried again going to UVM up here.
Yeah.
It's just you know.
What was it about
I just
film?
Struggle with it.
Yeah, because
you
know,
but
were,
I like, but yeah. I but I did, was studying film when I was in school, and that was you know
that's the fun thing about
that was the
college
fun part of
is
it.
Is you got to study what you wanted instead of in high school where you got to study. So you're doing plays in high school, you're getting into film in college. Was there a connection between those two? Were you hoping to get into film, create films, or were you more from the analytical like film critic approach.
I do like the idea of maybe of being a film critic and like and reviewing movies and such. Yeah. I had a podcast up here called the What the Hell Are You Watching podcast, which is still going.
Yes.
Lincoln Hayes was the co-host and the owner of the podcast, and
yeah,
he just basically had me on as a guest host for 3 years before he moved back to New York. But it's still going, so check that out. It's a fun little thing. But I don't know. I think performance inherent. You see performance in art. And then I did have some friends in high school who just were like super into that, you know, like super into like the stupid, like when you're a kid, intelligent, like faux intellectualism that you like to dabble in high school, where you're like, oh man, have you seen Fight Club? It's like the deepest movie you've ever seen. Capitalism. And that's just... That's what I was into. I was into
that. And that was you. That person you're making fun of is you.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. In a lot of ways. I had friends who did that, and then I was like, oh, well I want to keep these friends. So we'll get high and watch The Graduate and talk about it like we actually know what we're talking about.
And you're still doing that, yeah.
Oh, and I'm still doing that, but I think I'm more informed now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's every path, right?
Yeah,
you know, you always get better and
better.
You get
older, you get smarter.
I mean, everything that I do now... that I started in high school, whether it's music, well, we'll just say music, for example, it was crap.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be where I am now without
being
the crappy musician that I was then. So you were more into the critique, the literary aspect of movie reviewing and understanding, I guess.
Yeah, and I always, you know, back of your mind, you're always like, oh, I want to get into that industry. I want to get, you know, I want to be. In entertainment. That was, you know, what I would
say. So you kind of have an eye toward making your own. I could do this.
I didn't have a plan for any of it at all. That was the awful thing about it. It was very simply, I want to do entertainment stuff. So I'm going to major in, you know, English at first in college, and then switch to communications and then film later. And that's
that makes
like,
sense. Yeah.
But it's just like you don't really know. There's no path. I didn't have a plan. I just was. It was just
you're
an
interested
idea.
In entertainment. Period.
Yeah. Period. Yeah. I was like, oh, I like, you know, absorbing it, and I like entertaining people. I will inevitably do that with no, you know.
You can use your senior year and graduate level to kind of hone in on.
Oh sure. Yeah.
If you ever, you know, did that.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. But you didn't.
No.
So I'm curious about. Your thoughts on film now that you do it more just for fun. You had podcasts that you were co-hosting for a while. And I know you occasionally appear on Vermont Film Essentials.
Yes.
And there's this thing, cause I'm more of a casual movie viewer, enjoyer, right? I like seeing what other people, you know, I like reading reviews. I like knowing what other people think, and it can inform my, you know, whether I do see it or not, whether I do see a movie or not, there is the danger of over-intellectualizing, a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, there's enjoying the movie in the moment. Like, there's a lot of, like, you know, like Marvel movies, right?
They're dumb fun.
Yeah,
you know,
you go
and you watch it. And then
for 2 hours, you're enjoying yourself. And then as soon as the end credits are done and the bonus scene and the next credits and the next bonus scene are done and you're actually walking out, it's like it never happened.
Yeah.
You know, you just move on.
A lot of it, like I do in that regard with a lot of blockbuster movies, that's been my like disdain, you know, and I it is a sense of over-intellectualizing it in some cases where, you know, you should just be able to sit down and shut off your brain and watch a movie and do that. But it just, a lot of it, since I'm interested in film and also I'm interested in the industry of film, like I like, you know, looking at like box office numbers and like that sort of thing and like and what goes into making a movie and the different things like that. That it is hard to not see it as cynical, you know, like when and product wise, where it's like, okay, I saw the Marvel Infinity War and it was big and it was brash and the ending was shocking, but it was also like, okay, it felt like a 2.5 hour commercial for the next one,
movie.
You know,
because
it's just, you know, see this one, now you have to see the other one, and if you want to see, you know, and all that sort of...
Marvel's really taken on the mantle of, like, the old 50s and 60s serial, you know, Supermans and stuff.
Will Thanos take over the universe?
Come back in the year 2019 or 2020 to find out.
Find out next time on Infinity War.
Do you still have that interest in getting into the theatrical / movie side of things and pursuing that avenue at all? Or are you finding more the comedy side, the stand-up and the sketch and the improv more where you're headed?
Again, I think you're making the false assumption that I have any plan or idea whatsoever of what I'm doing or what I'm trying to do. I mean, I'm open to anything. If someone came up to me and was just like, "Hey, you want to write a movie?" I'll be like,
"Sure,
hell yeah, let's do it. Let's sit down. Let's make it happen."
You got the goods. You got the background now.
Yeah, I mean, I like writing. I like performing. Right now, I'm doing comedy in Vermont. It's not a living, you know, but it's just I want to do this. I want to do something like this, you know, But a couple of years ago, I was like, well, I'm going to move to Chicago and do Second City and just be improv driven. And then I started liking stand up a lot more. And so maybe I'll like writing, you know, other people's jokes, for television or something like that. Or I'll try to pursue something like that. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know. That's the best answer. I have no idea. I'm figuring out how I'm seeing other people, you know, do it, and I'm just sort of logging ideas of like what to do when inevitably I leave Vermont at some point.
Yeah,
probably.
You see that as inevitable?
At some point I'll leave here. It's a wonderful place.
What got you here in the first place?
My family moved up here. And that very simply that like when I was in college, my family moved up here. So when I went home, it wasn't home to, you know, Massachusetts. It was home to Vermont. And so that's how I got here. And then when you drop out of college and you move back with your parents and now it's in Vermont, it's just like, okay, well, here I am. It wasn't really a choice, but I don't dislike it. It worked out pretty dang good.
So how long ago was that then?
That was 2014, 2013. Okay. In that range.
Yeah, so the scene was really just starting to
blossom.
I got
here before like the Vermont Comedy Club was open. It was like 2 years before or a year and a half before. When I moved here, I started sort of interning with Nathan and Natalie, owners of the Vermont Comedy Club. At their Spark Arts. Right. I helped with the Green Mountain Comedy Festival that they put on.
That's right, yeah.
Tig Notaro was headlining that year. And that was a lot of fun.
I saw that show.
Yeah.
At the church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny coincidence, Ruff Francis opened that show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was so funny to me because I was just working the door.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And there were so many just like old ladies plucking their ears, walking out and just being like, I'm going to wait until it's over. Because it is quite the choice to be like, oh, I'm this soft-spoken comedian.
Soft. Right.
I'm going to have this.
And she's
Burlington
the one that handpicked.
Yeah, she liked them. She liked them as a band. It was like, oh, I want Ruff Francis to open.
So you started getting involved with them there. How did you find out about Spark Arts and stuff to begin with?
I Googled Vermont improv
you're itching to get into it.
Yeah, because I dropped out of college, fresh out of college. The only thing that was like, you know, I struggled with some mental health things.
Yeah.
And so I had to take care of that. Still do and am. Happy that I have to do a silly voice when talking about it, not speak candidly. The thing that I had always been able to do throughout all of it was, you know, do improv or do comedy, and I could get myself out of bed to, you know, do something like that. And so when I moved up here after dropping out of college, I was just like, okay, well, I'm not gonna not do comedy. I gotta do that. And so they had at the time, just at the Skinny Pancake, they would have improv shows, and they would have not like jams or anything because there really weren't a lot of people. It was really like maybe 14 people doing improv total.
Yeah, I saw a few shows there.
Yeah, it was like short forms. Yeah, it was short form. There was no long form.
Yeah.
It was just short form improv with like a rotating cast of 14 people. And I went a couple, I emailed them and said, hey, I did improv in college. Here's like a video of my team. I thought we were pretty good.
What kind of stuff were you doing? And we didn't really talk about what you were doing in college.
I was just not doing anything my freshman year. And then halfway through I saw a sign for like improv auditions. And so I just went and I made the team, and very simply that was just, and the team was great. There's two people who are very heavily involved in the UCB Theater in New York who are on that team. Dan Lepretto and Caroline Cotter, and they're hilarious, and they were so great. And it was it's so cool to have like that sort of influence very early in doing improv, because I'd never done improv. It was long form improv. Just like everyone, my only knowledge of improv was Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Same here. When I started, I just took a couple classes a few years ago, and I was expecting very Whose Line Is It Anyway type short form stuff. And then when the dramatic and the long form elements started to come in, I was like totally lost. And I was like, what is this? Where are we? Yeah. Where is this going? And it's been fascinating seeing how a lot of what improv was doing was more theater and less stand up. It was more toward that side of the discipline, if that makes any sense.
No, definitely. I mean, I saw my first improv, long form improv show that I saw was like my first week at school in New York. A group of people went to the UCB Theater and just saw the Friday night, main stage improv show. And I remember it was Neil Casey was one of the people who was on it. He played the villain in the new Ghostbusters movie. And he's a great improviser. He's really, really talented. I remember seeing him perform and seeing a bunch of, whoever else was on the team do that. And I was like, how are they doing it? This doesn't make sense. They had to have planned,
they wrote something, right?
Wrote something there. Yeah. But, having done it a little bit, you're like, oh, well, it's so obvious. And we got that, one of my proudest moments when I was like, okay, I think we might actually be good at this was at some party after one of our shows. And it was some guy just walked up and was like, hey, I've been going to the improv shows recently. It's really great, man. Like, it's just like, I know you do some of that, improv, but how much do you, how much of that is actually improv? Like, how much of that are you writing? And we're like, none, all of it is improv. And he's like, no, man. And he was like, kind of getting mad.
Getting belligerent.
He's just like, no, come on, just tell me. And I'm like, no,
it's
completely made up. And once you do it a little bit, you kind of see how it's done. I mean, truly amazing improv, which we recently went to the Del Close Marathon in New York and saw some really high quality improv, and it's still unbelievable. It's still like,
even having done it, you're still like, how do you do that?
They're like, how do you think of these things so quickly and so easily? And I did improv, for 6 years. I still do improv, and it's like, oh my God.
So you keep your feet in both the stand-up world and the improv world.
I'm definitely leaning more towards stand-up, but I am. I'm trying. I can't not.
You can't
you
not.
Keep going back, man.
Yeah.
You keep
what
going
is it,
back
what,
to improv.
What is it that keeps pulling you back in?
It's just so much fun, Adam. It's just a bunch of people making something together.
Yeah.
Positively and cohesively, and sometimes it's terrible.
Yeah.
And that's, of course it is.
Yeah.
because we're making it all up, and when it's great, it's so fantastic, and it feels so good to build something on the spot that you work together and you have, a connection, and it's,
do you think,
funny?
Because stand-up and improv, we could talk about sketch. Have you done much sketch work?
I did a little bit of sketch. I was in a briefly existing Burlington sketch group called Feed the Meter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember that now. The differences between stand-up and improv are pretty stark. I mean, obviously, you have the same result, which is when it works, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But you're going to crash sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they feed each other for you otherwise, like learning from one, putting it into the other?
Definitely. I mean, with stand-up, I try to make every, because a lot of stand-up and making your stand-up good and making your writing better is performing a bunch figuring out what works, what doesn't work, doing the same material over and over and over again. And that's, you know, I've been there's jokes in my set that I've that I wrote 4 years ago. But I just make them, you know, you kind of incrementally make them better. But if it's good, it's good. But I keep saying it. And sometimes you get sick of it. And so the improv part of me wants every time on stage to be different. And it makes for, I think it makes me a better writer and a better comedian because it makes me, it forces me to look at it, you know, and watch it and listen to it and see.
The stand-up.
Yeah. But still be loose enough that you can adapt it.
A big part of improv is listening, especially when you're on a team, is listening to the other, you know, the four or five or however many other people on your team.
But you're not listening. You have to listen to you know, when you're doing stand-up.
I would imagine that's you.
It can't be someone else being like, well, here's an objective view because that's condescending. And you don't do that in stand-up. You don't say, hey, you're this
maybe you
bit
should do
or
this.
That bit. Maybe you should do this. And it's like, no.
Yeah, piss off.
So many people have will be like, oh, this is like a good bit for you. Or like stupid little thing. Like, oh, man, that must be, you know, you must really get a lot of bits out of dealing with, you know, customers sometimes. And it's just like, no, it's not really. It's not how it works, really. It's not just, I think people have this false assumption of comedians that it's just like, well, I could never be a comedian because nothing interesting ever happens to me. And it's like, no, well, so much of stand-up is lies. So many stand-up stories that you hear is just outright fabrications.
I figured that out years ago.
Yeah.
But for the longest time, you know, when this comedian set up, well, I just started going out with this woman, or I just broke up with this woman, or I just got this job.
Yeah.
You're like, no.
You got that job 5 years ago. You wrote a joke about it.
You left the job 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're still telling jokes about it.
Yeah. Because it works. Because it's good. You know?
Yeah.
Because you can make people laugh when doing
it. Yeah. At some point, the premise behind a joke will just get so unbelievable.
Mm.
And you kind of, and that's like probably one of those things you find. Like, I just can't even relate to the premise anymore.
Sure.
You know, so what kind of things have you pulled into your set, and what kind of things are you pulling out of your set?
Well, I think you gotta, when you're performing, you have to, especially stand-up, you have to let go of, well, I think it's funny.
You can't get precious.
You can't get precious with it. You can't get indignant about, no, I'm funny.
This is good. They're wrong.
You are getting, well, when you do open mics, you do shows, and you do all this stuff, you are getting right away feedback. That's the thing, is it's not, oh, I can sit and I can watch my sets, and I can, you know, be like, okay, well, you said this way, or you should put this joke before this joke, or you should cut this line from it so it'll flow better.
Right.
But when you do it on stage, you're immediately getting feedback.
Yeah.
You're not getting like, okay, well, here's notes later. It's like, did they laugh?
Or
did
they
not laugh?
That is all that
matters.
That's
all that matters. How hard did they laugh? Was it a chuckle? Yeah. Is it worth it for the chuckle if you're going for, you know, the big stuff? Cut stuff out and add stuff, you know.
The
feedback is immediate in stand-up.
It's undeniable.
Yeah.
It is. When it's in total contrast to, say, the competitions.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like your high school competition, or even the stand-up competition a little bit, when only part of the judging for the stand-up competition.
We were going for laughs. We were like, okay, we need to rattle off
technical.
Six facts about landline telephones.
And, right.
You know, we need to make sure that the improv element I just remembered there's an improv element to it where the way that you decide if the landline telephone should be saved or not, you have to open an envelope and someone will have a superpower. that their superpower is that, like, they get really itchy or something, like it could be something stupid like that.
Right.
And so that character would have to then use his itchiness to decide. So that's where it was dumb in a high school thing, but we went to Knoxville, Tennessee and came in sixth place in the world. Thank you very much.
You can't deny the results.
Unless
you want to.
You ever been
I have not been to Knoxville.
Been to Knoxville?
No.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Winners go to Knoxville. That was what was so funny, they had teams from around the world. There was a team from Singapore. We matched up with a team from Turkey where we were like, we like hung out with them. Sort of for the duration for the weekend that we were there, And it was fun and it was exciting, but it was also like, why are we in Knoxville, Tennessee right now? At the University of Tennessee.
Let's show these people from Europe and Asia the best that America has to offer.
Yeah, it was just kind of strange.
Yeah. I would imagine. But you're getting judged at that point on, you know, partly
one piece, you know,
a lot of technicals, and even the stand-up competition from last year, you said it was part audience reaction.
Yeah.
But the other parts were
originality.
Were two people judging you on their subjectiveness.
Yeah.
But when you're actually doing the set, it's like, are they laughing? Are they not laughing?
Yeah.
It's one or zero.
Yeah. Well, when I did the contest, I was surprised that I was genuinely surprised that I won, particularly because I did my set after Joe Gingras, who came in second place, and his set was unbelievable, and it went so well, and I did mine right after him, and I was like, well, that was good, but it wasn't as good as what Joe just did. So I was surprised when I came out. So it wasn't just audience reaction, and that's why it's so stupid.
Right, yeah.
Because that's why competition is so dumb, because it's just about you know, putting on a good show or whatever.
Yeah.
It's all this arbitrary like labeling and just like the top five. There's people who are so funny who don't make it. There's people who are, you know,
they don't make it in a competition.
In a competition, yeah. In this competition, you know,
yeah.
People who don't. There's people who don't move on from the, you know, from the prelims to the semifinals who are great.
Well, you got very good, because
it's just such a subjective what happened that one time, that one night. It's not like a, you know, who's done the best over the course of their career, and that's what stand up. That's how you get rewarded with notoriety and specials and stuff like that.
Or longevity, I think.
Because
there's a ton of comedians. I'm just thinking of like Todd Barry or Dave Attell, who are just working all the time, always fill the house.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But they're not really popular, you know.
They're not really.
They don't get to wear like Jerry Seinfeld or Ray Romano.
Oh,
you know,
sure. Well,
they
don't get to Seinfeld,
right? Right. You know? But I mean, they don't get like their own network show, or they don't have the movies and
the TV shows. But that's
they just
love doing comedy and chugging it.
And that's their vote. That's the competition they win.
But that you have to get notoriety. You do have to get notoriety in some case, because so that you can tour and you can fill rooms and such. There's definitely tiers to it. You know, there's the Seinfeld, Mulaney, Silverman, crowd, you know, up top where it's like they're doing the Flynn,
right,
or whatever,
right,
versus the people who come to the Vermont Comedy Club who are sometimes just as good or better, but it's just they don't have that.
Well, then there's the breaks and the luck and
you know, it's like a whole, you have to move to either New York or Los Angeles, and you have to go up against people who are much better than you find a way to stick out, but sometimes only on the one show where the one right person is in the audience. So, you know, it's just very La La Land, very end of La La Land.
Oh, I didn't see that, it's on my list. That's one of your must-see movies.
It's a great movie. I liked it very much, but there's a point where she puts on like a one-woman show and only like six people show up.
Yeah.
But one of those six was a big movie, you know, got her an audition or whatever. So it's all, you know, there's luck involved in a lot of ways.
And that kind of goes back to what you said earlier, that at some point you got to leave Vermont.
At some point.
Do you dig what Vermont has to offer right now? Where do you want to push it to? Where do you think it could go to?
I mean, it's I don't think anybody's going to be making a living,
right,
you know, doing comedy up here. It's just very simply, you don't really get paid to do shows. I do a show and it's, you know, free admission,
right,
and the comedians get a drink, and I want to be able to pay them, but it's not viable. It's not always doable. When I do get paid for shows, it's great. It's so awesome. But the expectation is so sort of low. But you also have to put value on yourself and have to be like, well, you know, am I going to do any show? You know, I'm at the point where I can start saying no. But we have such a burgeoning scene and people on so many different levels that there's always room for people doing shows and doing cool stuff.
Yeah, oh, that's right. You host
I host Pulling Yo Chain.
Right, over at the Lamp Shop.
Stand-up showcase at the Light Club Lamp Shop every second Tuesday of the month. Free admission, 7:30 p.m. The next one is this Tuesday.
This Tuesday. Yeah. Which will actually be last Tuesday.
Well, you know what? Next one's August, I want to say 7th?
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Pulling Yo Chain.
Pulling Yo Chain.
And 7th. That is, like you said, it's free admission, so you get to run the show, you get to give the exposure, you get some stage time for yourself.
And other comedians. I like to, you know, it's cool running a show. It's fun to sort of get to handpick your lineup and
so you're more than just the talent at that point. You become part of the scene, part of one of the people helping
part
make
of building
scene.
The scene. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's important. I think it's in a lot of ways important. I mean, there's the Comedy and Crepes, which Nicole Sisk runs, which there's just the more opportunities there are for shows in different locations and success in those shows, the more opportunities there's going to be for comedy and comedians, because you're not just going to do two open mics and then, host a weekend at Vermont Comedy Club or get asked to do, open at the Flynn, which Annie Russell got to do for Marc Maron.
I saw that.
Like 2 years ago, which is so, so cool. Yeah.
That's not a game
you
plan.
You need to do open mics and get good enough there, and then you'll get booked for 5 minutes on this show, or you keep getting better. You know, keep doing open mics, keep writing and changing your stuff, and then. But it's important because there's not a ton of opportunities at like large scale places like Higher Ground or the Vermont Comedy Club. Mostly stand up is on the weekend, and then there's an open mic once a week, but. So that it's important to have the shows around town, the smaller shows. I'm not trying to see myself as like a curator or anything like that. I just, if you're good enough for 10 minutes and I like your stuff, then you're going to get on my show. But it's also important to craft a lineup that works for everybody that you want to,
You started that up yourself, I assume, right?
No, actually. Richard Bowen started that. He did it for like 2 years when he was living here more regularly. And when he moved away, he handed the reins off to me to host it and to put it all together. And I'm thankful for what he put together to start. But it's been fun to sort of take that mantle and run it, the way.
And I mean,
it's fun to do this. It's just so much fun.
And it's a tight crowd.
Yeah, it's a small space, but that means that you get a crowd, a comedy scene.
All the people.
Yeah.
Hey, let's all try this and let's all help each other
out. Well, there's so many different places that you can do it. There's open mics a couple times a week in Burlington. There's open mics I think in Central Vermont. There's a whole scene in Central Vermont that has, built itself up. And
where are they doing Positive Pie, is that right?
No, I think the Middlebury I don't know. I forget. the theater there that has the space in the back.
Yep.
The Marquee.
Okay.
But there's a whole scene down there. There's, there's the Woolen Mill Comedy Club. There's the Engine Room has started doing shows in White River, Vermont. Yeah. It's all over. I'm mostly centralized to Burlington because that's,
where you live.
That's where I live. And that's, where, that's an audience that I like and whatnot. But there's
how is
there's
playing so in different, different parts of Vermont?
It's different. It is different.
How do you?
I used to do some shows, some improv shows up in the Northeast Kingdom, and they like different stuff up there, man. There's different places you can go, and I like that variety. There's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
You always want there to be more opportunities because there's only so many slots you could fill on your shows, and there's only so many shows that you can do.
Which is why you're still doing open mics.
Yeah.
Which I know, like, as a musician, I often, I used to do open mics, like me and an acoustic guitar, and then you see a bunch of other people, and it's mostly open mic you would think of as just relegated to people who are still learning their craft and still on their way up to getting some kind of regular gig or some kind of more professional Thursday, Friday, Saturday gig. But that's not really the case with stand-up, with open mics with stand-up. It's more the material itself being new and finding its footing.
Yeah, yeah. Or old and being rewritten. But you got to keep doing it. It was There was like a golden era of open mics in Vermont where there were 4 a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, with diminishing times. So it was like 10 minutes Monday, 5 minutes Tuesday, 4 minutes Wednesday, you know. And so it was almost like you could write a bit in a week. You know, you do 10 minutes, see yeah. what works there, whittle it down to 5 minutes, you yeah. know, whittle it down more and more until you're at the core of what actually works.
Yeah, unlike music where you can practice repeatedly in your bedroom or in your garage with your band or, yeah. or wherever, you can only practice a routine, a stand-up routine, so much before you're really practicing.
You can memorize it, but you got to get in front of a crowd if you know it's any good or not.
Yeah.
You know, because that's, you always get that, you have to get that immediate response. You can practice in your room and talk into the mirror and, you know.
But it's, all you're doing is memorizing words at that point.
You don't know
if
it's good.
Yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah, you can't really get the delivery or the timing honed at that point.
You have to hone it by doing it.
I have to ask you about something I saw you do, speaking of.
Sure.
At a open mic that you did a couple weeks ago, I want to say it was like 3 or 4 weeks ago, you started a joke, you started a bit, and I could tell you had like probably 4 or 5 punchlines, laugh lines in the routine, and you did like one line of it, and it bombed. Mm. And you just said, forget it, I'm going to go on to a whole other,
yeah.
I'm just going to take this whole thing and move it off. And how did that feel to have that work, and was it freeing? Was it like, okay, back to the woodshed, or was it, you know, how do you recoil from something like that?
Well, it's different. It's different every time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times where I'll start a joke and it'll bomb and I'll barrel through it.
Right.
It's just, I think at that particular moment I was like, I don't want to waste my or anyone else's time. I don't think this is ready or good enough, or it's not going to land. Maybe it's a little, you know, racier on the nose, or like miscalculated it being funny or not, you know, just very simply that. I don't know. It's different every time. I think that, you know, ultimately when I'm doing open mics, I have a different goal every time. Sometimes it's just get up there and rattle out, you know, a 5-minute set that you know that you like, that will make people laugh just to keep practice, just to keep, you know.
Yeah, the muscles.
Keep the muscles,
shape.
You know, in shape and loose and such. And sometimes it's like, well, I wrote something new and I want to see if it works.
Yeah.
Or I have something new that works. I want to pair it with something and see how that goes back to back if I'm going to be doing a longer set sometime. It's open mics are it's a science, but it's an individual science. Everybody has different goals when doing it, and there's no. But that's the thing, is giving advice in stand up and giving advice in comedy in general is just kind of like, relevant, you know, because it's everyone approaches it in a different way. Everyone does it differently. Everyone succeeds differently.
Yeah. What are some universal truths, though, to performing, you know, to be broad enough to say, like, with whether it's stand up or improv, what are some guiding principles that you've taken in or that you would pass on that you think, regardless of, you know, what the format is or who you are individually, are still important that you keep reminding yourself of time and again?
I think you have to be entertaining. You have to want to make people laugh. I think that's the core of it. I think a lot of people get indignant and don't really get it. And there is great, you know, quote unquote offensive humor that lands and works with people and is good, but it's not inherently good. So a lot of times people will be like, we'll blame the audience, you know, well, screw you, that was funny, sort of.
That goes over
sort of
well.
Mentality,
yeah.
Which, you know, sometimes it can get a laugh. Sometimes it's freeing for an audience to be like, okay,
it's fun when you see a comedian or, you know, or an improver, like, acknowledge a bomb.
Yeah.
You know, and have some fun.
You
with
have
it.
To acknowledge it. That's the thing is I've had starts to, you know, I'll have a 15-minute set and my first 2 jokes don't go well. I'll just be like, well, that didn't go well. You know, just kind of, you got to release the pressure a little bit. You got to get on their side.
Because you got another 14 minutes.
Yeah, you got to get on their, you have to get on their side. That's ultimately what it is every audience is going to be kind of different. But you ultimately, you have to.
Well, that's pretty key.
They're there. They're there to see your show. So make it a good show.
And they want to be entertained.
Yeah, and they want to be entertained. So entertain them. Dang it.
You touched on, you just hit on a really good piece of advice, which is, you know, you're there to entertain them and they want to be entertained.
But there's also a paradox where sometimes the audience is bad, which is true. Sometimes, yeah. You know, that's why it's so hard to give universal advice about comedy, because I can say, don't blame the audience. You know, you they're there to see you. And if they don't laugh, it's not their fault. But sometimes an audience is just stuck up and crappy and not, you know, responding to anyone or anything.
But even still,
so,
it's probably worth.
But it's worth still
saying,
worth doing it.
It's worth saying, don't blame the audience. Because maybe it is their fault.
Do that to shrug it off sometimes. Yeah. But you can't always.
That doesn't help.
There's people who are like, audiences just don't get me or understand my comedy. It's like, no, well, maybe that's true. Maybe that's 100% true. But more than likely, if audiences are always saying, nah, this person's bad.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just not.
Maybe, well, maybe this
bad.
Bit.
Maybe
yeah.
this bit. Yeah, or this bit, not this person, you know. Just. Yeah. Listen to the audience. And that's why I have to do it a bunch of times. I've written a new thing, gone to an open mic, had it bomb, and then been like, oh, well, that's bad, and I can't do it again. But I've also done it again, and it's worked really, really well. And then you make that sort of a staple, and you know, because not every audience is different. Every show is different. You got to get used to performing, but you also have to get used to being okay with things not going well, you know, because it's not a big deal.
You got to shrug it off.
You got to shrug it off.
Yeah. What do you
got? Learn from it. You know, I'm being paradoxical in a lot of ways. It's just like, but don't, you know, brush it off, but don't brush every time off, you know, learn from what the
audience
take it
is personally.
Telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn from what the audience is telling you.
There you go.
Ultimately.
What do you have coming up over the, you know, what are you looking forward to getting into or taking part of or doing over the next, say, you know, year?
Well, I'm
what would
here.
You like to get more?
I'm at least here. I'm in Vermont. I like it here. My goal in Vermont is to just keep doing it and stay loose and try and make connections in other places, you know, visit the New York and Boston are not that far away.
Yeah.
Montreal, you know, I've done shows out there, but you know, ultimately it is a connections game in a lot of ways. It's like, who do you know? I go to New York, I message the five people I know, like, hey, who's got shows? And oftentimes it's, you know, plan it better, you know, it's too late and whatnot. But my plan for the next year is just keep doing comedy up here, keep doing my shows, try and experiment and do new things, because you just got to keep doing it.
There you go.
You just got to keep doing it. That's all there is.
That's all you can do. That's all you
know
how to
do. Yeah. I know nothing else. I'm terrible at everything else.
Oh, it's a good thing you're doing well with comedy then.
Oh boy, oh boy.
Otherwise you'd be screwed. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I'm just reiterating what you're saying.
I agree.
Because I'm listening to what you're saying.
Thank you.
And I'm acknowledging it.
Yes, and.
Yeah. Yes, and you are
crap
at everything.
I am
else.
Crap at everything.
So let's move on to the final part of the show, where we talk about what it is that you like about Vermont. And you mentioned a few things already, but in specifics, tell me about your favorite Vermonter.
My favorite Vermonter. Did I answer this in my email?
That was the one you left blank.
Yeah, I did leave that one blank because I don't really. I mean, I don't know Vermont history. I don't know. I don't know what like who my favorite Vermonter. I don't know. It's Bernie Sanders is pretty cool. Ben and Jerry, they're nice. They seem nice. They make good.
You're just
dairy
passing
farmers,
through here. Let's
cheese,
be honest.
Cheese right? makers. Big fan of those guys. Beer makers. Yep. My girlfriend.
She's cool.
She was just looking at me for not saying her.
Trying to figure out why she wasn't first on the list. But,
my dog's pretty cool. That's not a person or like a Vermonter.
Vermonter. All I said is Vermonter.
Vermonter.
Doesn't need to be a Vermont person.
My dog. I'm going to go with my dog. Yep. I'm going to just.
That's where you are.
I like that tree outside. I'm just looking
it's
at
a Vermont
things
tree.
And naming them. Tina's pretty cool. What's up, Tina?
I think your favorite Vermonter leads into the next question, your favorite Vermont place.
The Star Farm Dog Park.
Yeah.
I like it there. It's like right up the road. It's very close to where I live.
Yeah.
And I like dogs. I don't know if
I gathered
if that's been, I haven't really cataloged that in this, but I like dogs a lot. I got this dog.
Is she your first dog?
She's my first dog. I didn't have a dog growing up.
Yeah.
Or anything like that.
Yeah, I didn't either until 5 or 6 years ago. I got my first dog. I've been a cat person my whole life.
Yeah, well, it was just, you know, it was last year. I was just like, you know what? I want to get a dog. And I just got a dog, and it's been great.
Yeah,
Tig is amazing.
Where did you get Tig?
I got her from Rescue Me VT, which is a small rescue in Vermont. It's this this woman, Katie Delp, has connections to St. Croix in the Caribbean.
Oh.
And so she'll, I think once a year, she'll bring some pups up. Train him and adopt him out. And
so was Tig born in
Tig was
Saint
born
Croix?
In St. Croix. Tig is a St. Croix street.
So she's
dog.
Not a native Vermonter.
Not a native Vermonter. So
okay.
I guess
well, that's
that
fine. No, I wasn't asking for a native necessarily.
Count.
No, that counts.
Yeah,
it counts. And your favorite?
I just like dogs.
Yeah,
I just like going to the dog park and looking at dogs. There's so many different dogs. Yeah. Did you know that?
There are quite a few different.
There's so many different dogs. There's
cats.
Big ones. There's small ones. They're like they're the ones that are fast. Ones that are like kind of lumbery.
Not,
there's soft ones. There's springy ones. There's ones that jump on you. There's ones that run away from you.
And we're watching your dog.
My dog is currently just. If I'm a little distracted, I apologize.
Yeah.
My dog is currently torturing a fly on the window by like biting at it but not eating it. It clearly is injured.
Oh, there we go.
Oh,
nope.
Did you get it? Nope. Still, nope. She's torturing it.
This is great radio, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, where'd it go? Oh, it's over here.
Oh, it's over here.
All right.
My dog is, she's part greyhound, and she just runs.
Oh, they're runners. Yeah.
Book it. It's the funnest thing in the world is seeing her wrangle up like 4 or 5 other dogs.
Yeah.
And just get them to chase her. And then she's faster than all of them. So they get frustrated and start fighting each other. And
nice.
Then she just comes over to me and is like, what's going on?
I don't know. Those dogs are nuts. I don't know what that's all about. Your favorite Vermont memory?
Oh, yeah. I saw Bernie Sanders at a Michael's. And it was perfect.
So just the Michael's, the craft store.
The craft store Michael's.
Right by the interstate.
Yeah, right by the interstate. There's a craft store. It's called Michael's. It is a chain. It is everywhere.
Yes, it is. But it was just to be clear, it was the one by the interstate.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was there. I was getting some crafts.
Yeah.
And he was there and I turned a corner and he was throwing a Nerf football with like a small child. He was just like passing it back and forth.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? And then the mom of the child walked up and was just like, do you know who that is? And she's like, no. I'm like, it's Bernie Sanders. She's like, oh.
Yeah.
And we went up.
And the kid probably still didn't know who that was.
Yeah, had no idea. And I was behind him in line.
Yeah.
And he was there with Jane Sanders. And they were buying, I assume, things for a grandchild's birthday or something like that.
Yeah.
Because they were... It was like a Nerf football that he bought. He's like, this is a good one. This will work perfectly. And I saw him in line, and Jane was buying. And he looked at something that was for sale, like by the register.
Uh-huh.
And he gave like a deep, deep sigh. Like a deep Bernie Sanders sigh.
What was it? So I got to know
was,
now.
He picked it up and it was a Superman coloring book. And he just started
flipping through it.
I don't understand.
Was he going to buy it for his friend Patrick?
I don't know if he was upset. I don't know why the Superman coloring book, why he was exhausted by it.
He was probably thinking, you know what, Patrick Leahy's got his Batman thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do the Superman thing.
He's just like, why not a Superman movie?
I should be Superman.
Why does Zack Snyder get to blow up
the
other congressman from Vermont?
That's what it was.
I think it was
Batman versus Superman.
I think part of it also.
We should recast that.
Oh my God, and put him in there.
Bernie versus Patrick.
Bernie versus Patrick. Oh boy.
Martha is my mother's name. It was my mother's name, too.
Oh, my God. We're best friends now. Well, I think that I also thought for a second it was just like, well, Superman is a alien who is very welcome in America, probably because of the color of skin. There are other illegal aliens who will not be treated as well.
No.
But Superbad. Superbad does.
Well, he's a very silly man, and I'm happy that he's
yeah, representing us.
And he's just so goofy.
He is. That's,
like, people are like, he's so serious. What a cool grit. And I'm just like, he's like a drawing of a grandpa. He's like someone drew a grandpa and then it brought it to life. And he was just like, things are in the way.
I'm Bernie.
I'm sick of rich people.
Sitting in his chair. I would want Bernie Sanders to be president if and only if he was confined to like a pleather chair, just rocking back and forth while making all his decisions. That just makes the most sense to me.
Just get rid of the big desk in the Oval Office.
Yeah, and just and have it would
just
be
his like lazy boy.
A series of chairs.
Yeah. I like it.
I want exposed midriff, just big beer belly Bernie Sanders.
You might want that, but I think you might be alone in that.
Oh, dang it.
Tell me about your favorite Vermont food.
Us liberals will never get what we want in this country.
We never will. Yeah, we need to get over that.
I want to see Bernie Sanders' belly button, but I never
will. He only lives a few streets down. We could knock on his door and ask.
Okay. Are we taking this on the road?
Yeah.
Hi, Bernie. Just a quick
small
question.
Favor. This might sound weird.
Let me see your tum.
Yeah, we are constituents, just so you know. Tell me about your favorite Vermont food or drink.
Oh, boy. I like the cheese that we got here is pretty awesome. I like some cheese. I love me some cheese. Vermont's good at cheese. I do, and it's a real...
What's your favorite kind of cheese?
My favorite kind of cheese?
Yeah.
Well, sharp cheddar cheese, of course.
There you go.
It's good on crackers. It's good melted on eggs. Cheese is great, and there's so much of it here.
You don't really need to defend that.
There's so much cheese.
There's a lot of cheese.
There's so much cheese. There's Manchego cheese. There's Asiago cheese.
Yeah. Are you going to go into like a whole Forrest Gump routine?
Asiago cheese.
American cheese.
Boars and cheese. Cheddar cheese. Sharp cheddar cheese. Extra sharp cheddar cheese. Mm.
Where can folks find you online? See what you're up to next. What you're doing?
Well, I have an Instagram. I'm at Washington Bridge. So it's like George Washington Bridge, but it's Tim Bridge.
Got it.
And there, it's very. I should change it soon.
That's stunning.
It's not clever enough to make up for how confusing it is.
Yeah.
Because it does just say Washington
Tim
Bridge.
Which, like, that's probably something that should be done once in a while.
I do it myself, thank you very much. I don't need others washing.
Wait, so is that what you put on your Instagram account?
Yep.
Is you washing yourself?
It's only bath photos.
sponge baths.
Exclusively
showers.
X-Pro 2 filtered bath selfies on my Instagram.
Wow. So I think your follower count is going
to
go up exponentially.
Bang. Give it
once
to
this,
me.
Once this hits.
I love it. I'm on Twitter. I don't tweet as much, but I'm trying to, at haha Tim Bridge. And then also follow my dog on Instagram. She has an Instagram account.
Tell me.
At hot tiggity dog.
Hot tiggity dog.
Yeah.
All right. So I gotta add that.
She has more followers than me.
Seriously?
Oh yeah. Like by like 400. Yeah.
Well, that's
but of course she does. She's perfect.
And on that note, we've been speaking with... Why do I always say we? I've been speaking with Tim Bridge today. Thank you for your time.
Very inclusive, that's why. You're a very inclusive man.
That's me. You can follow Vermont Favorites on Facebook to find out about upcoming guests, and you can subscribe to the podcast and catch up on any episodes you've missed at imadeitup.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Vermont Favorites is a production of WBTV LP Burlington, online at 99.3wbtv.org. I'm Adam Rabin. Talking with Tim Bridge. Thank you for listening.
Woo! Thank you, Adam.
Take care.